This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
If Florida State,
we won national championships and ACC championships.
It's caught! Touchdown official, Kelvin Benjamin!
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Game over! Those are the champions of college football!
Jameis, why? Jameis, no! No! No!
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today on the podcast, we're going to take a belated look at a little bit of the Georgia Tech game, and then we're going to do an early preview of Oregon. So let's go ahead and get started. First of all, talking about the Georgia Tech game going into this, or coming out of the ACC Championship game, those of you who've been regular listeners and readers over at Knoll Digest know that I was very nervous about Florida State's chances in the ACC Championship game. I felt like Georgia Tech actually would be a tougher opponent, that was a tougher game for Florida State than their first playoff matchup would be. That was my belief going in. I thought that they had a real chance of losing that game. Florida State was banged up. You could see the exhaustion in that team. They came in just completely spent after 6 weeks in a row without a break, playing some very physical teams from Virginia and Boston College and Miami and Florida, and looking down the stretch, that final stretch, they were very banged up, particularly on the front seven, to the point where, you know, a couple of the best linebackers on the team, looking at Terrence Smith, he was a shell of himself. Was playing on one leg really in those last two games against Florida and against Georgia Tech. And with their offense, they had the number one most efficient offense in the country, according to Football Outsiders F+. With that offense, I thought they had a real chance of giving Florida State a lot of trouble. And they did. They gave Florida State a lot of trouble. And honestly, when Eddie Goldman went down in the first half, really first quarter against Georgia Tech with that ankle injury, it really didn't look very good because Florida State hadn't really been able to stop them even with Goldman on the field, and he being Florida State's best interior defensive lineman all year was a bad sign because you've got to be able to defend that option inside out, and they were able to plug and play, which was actually, it turns out, in my view, the end result of that game with Goldman going out with the ankle injury, the end result of that injury is probably a positive because they got to see Derek Nnadi forced into action. He played much more than they had planned on, for sure. And you know, they didn't know if they could trust him. And I thought Nnadi played extremely well in that game. He actually, in a couple cases, played a few plays better than Goldman had early in the game, which, you know, obviously, his level of play overall was not quite at the level that Goldman brings to the table most of the time, but he was actually very good. He was able to shed blocks. He was able to create piles on the inside. He was able to get off of blocks and pursue down the line. I was very impressed by what I saw, and I know that the coaching staff, watching that film afterwards, knows that they now have a guy that they can give some snaps in this national semifinal game as the starters get a little bit tired and as Oregon runs a lot of plays. So now, you know, you've got another guy that you can rely on. The other guy that came in and they needed to rely on was another true freshman in Trey Marshall. I mean, Trey Marshall had not played much on the year. He was splitting time in practice mostly as the sixth defensive back along with LaMarcus Brutus. And he had not really seen the field. They had to know that they could trust him. And, you know, being the backup star when the star is Jalen Ramsey, who doesn't come off the field, you're just not going to play that much. But then Ronald Darby went out with a hyperextended elbow, and on a tackle, it was a little bit of a freak hit there. And they decided that moving Ramsey outside and putting Trey Marshall on the field at the star was the best decision. And there's no doubt that it was the best decision because basically your other option was to put Nick Wasem on the field at that field corner. And against Georgia Tech, he's just not physical enough on the edge. nor is any other option really behind those guys. So the best thing is to move Ramsey outside, who, you know, nobody has to doubt about his physical ability on the outside and his physicality. And then Marshall came in and was really terrific from that star spot. Played with a lot of speed, and again was a very physical presence and a reliable tackler on the edge, and made a big difference. So, you know, again, coming out of that game, they really came out, I think, better than they went in because of the way that they were able to develop to see that a couple guys had developed over the course of the year. Also, the other thing is that for the first time in quite a while, Florida State went without turning the football over a bunch. Winston didn't throw an interception in this game. He was very careful, was protected extremely well by that revamped offensive line, which right now I think is playing as well as any offensive line in the country. And they were able to run the football basically at will with Dalvin Cook. And essentially it was a game where the offense had to hold serve, and they held serve until the defense got up a couple breaks, and then, you know, the ball game was over. You still would like to see them be able to knock a team out, would like to see them be able to, if you're the Florida State coaching staff, you'd like to convert a couple of those red zone trips into touchdowns rather than field goals. You'd like the defense to get a couple stops earlier to be able to actually put a team out of range. But again, they're able to make the plays when they needed to, and they were able to make it through the regular season without getting beaten, and that's really what it's all about. And you could see after that game the stress of the streak and the stress of the pressure of making it back to the national championship game, and the way that that team, I mean, it really looked like the weight of the world had fallen off the shoulders of so many of those players. You could see it. It was just a massive catharsis from the coaching staff down. I mean, the coaching staff, you could see it. Jimbo Fisher, when he got to the interview room, and he just sat back and almost laid back. You just don't see Fisher that relaxed, but they were so relaxed, and, you know, almost like they'd been taking muscle relaxers, because you could see that the stress and the pressure of living up to the expectations and trying to live up to the expectation to get back to the playoff and all of that had really worn on them. And all of the close games that they've, you know, this is a team that's just refused to lose. They were really worn down, and you could see that. And I think since then, and you know, there's been some good reports coming out of practice that they're a much fresher team at this point, not just in terms of the injury situation, which they're much, much fresher there, obviously, but mentally. And this team is much, much more mentally ready to play and play aggressively than they've been all season, I think. And I think it's very difficult. I think it's hard for people who haven't been a part of really high level sports and haven't been close to it to understand and appreciate what a grind it is to try to sustain long win streaks and to try to repeat after winning a championship. Because the thing is, when you win a championship, you know, the first time you're able to be aggressive because you're hungry and you want to win, and it's there for the taking, and you go and you take it. But then, you know, and this is something that Fisher has tried very hard ever since they won the title. He's tried very hard from using the terminology of reigning champions rather than defending champions to talking about how, you know, this is a different team, which he's right. It's a different team. But that, you know, this is that you're not defending a championship. You're not trying to protect or preserve anything. You're trying to go out and win another. He's conscious of the difference that there is between the first year and the second. He did his best with preaching to the kids that there is a difference in terms of expectations and all that, but in terms of how you go about it, you still have to be aggressive. You still have to play to win. You're not defending anything. You just go out and you've got to stay hungry. It's really, really difficult to do that. And that's why he spent so much time preaching about that to these players. Because the thing that's most natural when you are defending a streak, when you're defending a championship, and regardless of whether you talk about defending versus reigning or whatever, you won it the last time. When you won it the last time, it's very, very difficult to come in with the kind of aggressive mindset that you had when you won it the first time, because you know what it's like. You know what it is to get there. And the expectations are different. And then there's this other piece that you start to play against your prior performance. So you're trying to repeat what you did before. And that's really, really difficult. It's like when you're playing golf. For those of you who are golfers, you know, you hit the perfect shot. You know the feeling of hitting it flush. Hit it dead center. There's just no feeling like it. And you hit this great shot. You put it right next to the pin, or, you know, in the hole or whatever. And then the next time you swing, all you're trying to do is repeat what that felt like. You're trying to repeat the same swing. You find yourself, okay, what was I thinking when I hit that swing? And so you try to repeat it. And then eventually what happens is you overthink it and you hit a bad shot. That's kind of the way this works in these things. And so it's really difficult, almost impossible, to avoid playing not to lose when you are the reigning champion, when you're the team that everybody expects to be there. It's hard to avoid this sense of trying not to fail. And you can't play aggressively when you're trying not to fail. And I felt like this team at many points in the year was just trying not to fail. They were just trying, you know, they were just trying to make sure, let's just make sure we get to the playoff. Let's just make sure we get there. Because, I mean, all of this stuff will be worthless. It won't be, all the work we put in won't have been worth a thing if we don't get there. That was the sense that I got from this team. It's all going to be worthless if we don't get there, if we don't win it all. And that's a colossal amount of pressure to play under. And this team, I think, played under that level of pressure all season. And now, after that game, I felt like they did not feel that kind of pressure anymore. They were very much, okay, now we're back to where we can play. Now, you know, Winston said, you know, or Dalvin Cook said after the game, I feel like we could play looser now. Winston said, you know, I think we prepare better when it's playing against playoff games or big time games. Because we've got a different attitude. That's what he said. We've got a different attitude when we're playing in playoff games or big time games. Well, that's where they are now. Now they feel like they can be aggressive. And the thing is, being an underdog in this game for the first time in over 50 games for Florida State, being an underdog and a 9-point underdog is a positive for them, because they don't feel the pressure at this point. They feel like they have to go out and prove something. They feel like they have to go out and prove that they deserve to be there. That's a very different thing from going out and not disappointing everybody and not disappointing themselves and not feeling like they wasted everything by not even getting there. Now they're there, and now they want to prove it. So I think we're going to see a very focused and very aggressive Florida State in this semifinal game. And it'll be very interesting to me to see how that plays out on the field of play. It's going to be very, very interesting. So let's go ahead and move then to our discussion about Oregon and about this matchup. And by all accounts, when Jimbo Fisher and the Florida State coaching staff when they saw the announcement and they saw that they were going to be sent to Pasadena to play Oregon, they were excited. And honestly, you know, I've watched a lot of tape on Oregon now in preparing for the stretch run, putting together some previews and so on for this game. I've watched a lot of tape on Oregon, and honestly, this is a great matchup for Florida State. I've said all year that I felt the two best teams in the country were Florida State and Alabama. And when it looked like Florida State would get Alabama, that's a toss-up game. And if those two teams play in the national title game, you know, it's really anybody's game. I that's not a great matchup for Florida State. But Oregon, and don't get me wrong, Oregon's a really good football team. Oregon is a great matchup for Florida State. And some of you out there will remember what I sounded like back in 2013 before Florida State played a Clemson team that a lot of people were picking to beat that Florida State team. And I came in and I said, listen, the film don't lie. What I'm seeing on tape, I think this Florida State team should win by double figures. I think they should win by 17 or more against this Clemson team. And that's not to say that Clemson team is not a good team. I just think it's a terrible matchup. And I think Florida State's the better team. And, you know, unless Clemson gets out to a really quick start and is able to get a cushion, Florida State could blow them out. I feel very similar about this Oregon game to the way that I did about the Clemson game in 2013. It's a great matchup for Florida State. It just is. And, you know, that there's any number of reasons why. And I'm going to pick through a few of these things preliminarily, and we're going to cover a little bit more of that in future podcasts here before the game starts. I've got a couple more I want to do. But, you know, one thing I've already heard from one program insider is, and this was already, I had already had this thought on watching tape, but in his view, based on the film that he'd watched, he said, this is the seventh or eighth best defense Florida State's played. And listen, that's not to say Oregon's not a good defense. The thing is, Florida State's played, I think, seven top 30 defenses. Actually, Wake Forest was one of the best defenses Florida State's played. They just had no offense. Got two top three round corners, a couple guys that'll be in the pros on their front seven. That's a good defense, and their physical defense. But I think that's right. I think that this Oregon defense is probably the seventh or eighth best defense Florida State has played. And the thing is, they're not used to playing an especially physical brand of football either. And one of the things, again, that sticks out on tape is that nobody really on their schedule, aside from Stanford, Utah, and Michigan State, really even tries to be physical. And it's a different kind of football. And obviously everybody out there plays more of a spread game. They've got a lot of really good quarterbacks and receivers on the West Coast. There's a lot of skill out there, but there's not a whole lot of physicality. And so, there, you know, and I think Oregon is actually one of the more physical teams on the West Coast, without a doubt. But Florida State's going to want to come in and test their manhood early on, without a doubt. And ultimately, I think looking at Florida State's offense, that's where the physicality in particular can be very different. Florida State has the best offensive line they'll have seen by a lot. And that offensive line is big, and it's more physical than they've played against. And Florida State's backs are physical backs. So it's going to be interesting to see Florida State try to come out and take the initiative with physical play early on. Looking at their defense, looking at the Oregon defense versus the Florida State defense or Florida State offense, I'm impressed. I think the Oregon defense is a good defense. I think it's a top 35 defense in the country, probably better than that. It's probably top 25. And I might be, and that's accounting, that's adjusting for Ifo Ekpreolomu's injury. You know, with Ifo Ekpreolomu, then they're probably a little bit better than that. But there are some holes that I saw that I keep seeing on tape. And, you know, the thing is, they're big. They've got size on the defensive line. They play a 3-4. They've got, they go about 290, 300, 290 across that front three. And they've two gapped a lot with both defensive ends and with the defensive tack with their nose tackle. They've tried to two gap a bunch and let their linebackers come downhill against the running game. They don't get a whole lot of pass rush out of that front three in particular, but you know that's what they're trying to do. They're going to try to occupy blockers with those front three as a rule, get off, you know, shed blocks when possible, but generally let the inside linebackers, who I you know, they're impressive. I like their linebackers. I like their inside linebackers in particular. I like 22, 35, and 48. They're, you know, 22 is kind of, he's actually similar a little bit to a Telvin Smith. You know, he got dinged up, had a shoulder injury during the year and started to miss some tackles, but he's very athletic. We'll talk a little bit about what that's going to imply for Winston in a moment. But they've got good linebackers, and they've got size there. They go, you know, the 35 and 48, they're two bigger linebackers, are, you know, 240 plus. They're big linebackers, and they've got some size on the defensive front. Those two defensive ends, I think, are very, very good. I think Eric Armstead is probably going to be pushing into the late part of the first round. You know, he's 6'7", 290. He's a big boy. No doubt. He's a big man. And that guy is going to be problematic. And you know, they're going to try, I think, to get him matched up on Rod Johnson because of Johnson's being the least experienced up front. They've got that size. And what they've been able to do against Pac-12 offensive lines, but by and large, is occupy those blockers, let the linebackers come downhill, and they've been able to more or less stop the run with their front seven, front six. And you know, when teams go spread, they're able to stop the run with five because of the size they have, in particular at the defensive end positions and at the linebacker positions. The problem that they have is at the nose tackle. 55, their starting nose tackle, for those of you who've been around the Florida State program for a while, reminds me a little bit of Bud Thacker, but with a little bit more size. He's a guy that, you know, I saw get put on skates a number of times, and he's a guy that is, I think, going to have a really, really difficult time holding his own against Cam Irving. I think Cam Irving will be able to single block him all game. And if you can single block a nose tackle, that's a serious problem. And honestly, if they had an elite nose tackle, I think this would be a top five or top 10 defense. They've got everything else to be a very good defense. But that problem in the middle, where they're going to have difficulty protecting their inside linebackers, that's a problem. Because if you can't demand a double team from that nose tackle position against a guy like Irving, if a guy like Irving can single block you and neutralize your nose tackle in a 3-4 scheme, then what that's going to mean is Florida State's guards, Trey Jackson and Josue Matias, are going to be able to get free releases to the second level. And that's a huge problem for an Oregon run defense. Because as big as their linebackers are, they're not equipped. Nobody's really equipped at linebacker to take on 325-pound, 340-pound offensive guards coming downhill to the second level. It's just not going to happen. And that's where they're going to have, I think, a serious problem. I don't think they're going to be able to do much against the Florida State interior three on the offensive line. And I think they're going to have a lot of difficulty trying to keep the Florida State offensive line from getting to the second level. And you know, I'll be interested to see how they move guys around. You know, they're not going to be able to two gap with both defensive ends like they've done quite a bit, because at 290, they're big, 6'6", 6'7", 290. But going against a guy like Bobby Hart or Rod Johnson or the two guards that Florida State has, you can't two gap against Bobby Hart when he's 330 pounds. He's eaten guys alive when they've tried to two gap him on the edge there, especially in the run game. You just can't do it against him. You can't do it against Rod Johnson and expect to win that matchup very much. And in the Pac-12, those guys at 290 are pretty close to the weight of the guys that they're going against. But in this game, they're outweighed by 20, 30 pounds. And it's a pretty big difference. So, you know, that's, I think, a serious problem. The other thing is, when I went through the Michigan State film, for example, they had two quarterback pressures in 23 first-half passes against Michigan State. Two pressures in 23 passes versus Michigan State. The first was a zone blitz with outside pressure. And really, the pressure, quarterback probably should have gotten rid of the ball earlier, and the pressure was not all that bad. I mean, frankly, Winston probably just steps up out of it. The other was an inside green dog. So it's where, you know, you have an inside linebacker when he sees that a particular player stays in for, when he sees that the guy that who would be responsible for him stays in to pass protect, he's going to go. It's going to be a delayed blitz. The other was an inside green dog with a little bit of pressure there. And again, it didn't cause all that much trouble. So, you know, if Winston gets the kind of time that I saw Connor Cook get from Michigan State, and by the way, Cook looked, I did not think very much of Cook after breaking that tape down in detail. He's not a guy I would draft after what I saw there. He had all the time in the world and still at certain points found ways to hurry himself and miss some spots. If Winston gets the kind of time that Cook got in that game, Florida State could score 56, 63 points in this game because they didn't lay a hand on him. I mean, he could have eaten a sandwich back there a few times. I mean, I was counting to five. And that is not what you want if you're Oregon. They're going to have to find a way to pressure Winston. And the problem is, again, they're not going to be able to compress the pocket from the inside all that easily. They're going to have to do it probably bringing six. And this is a team defensively, they don't like to bring more than five. They're a fire zone team. They like to play that cover three shell. Sometimes they'll jump to a cover two shell, but by and large, they're going to play soft coverage in the secondary, try to bring five from different angles, and then force you to execute down the field, and they're just trying not to give anything up deep. Which, that's how I would play Winston to begin with. Don't give him anything deep, because he throws it so well down the field. But the problem is that if they're not able to get any pressure on him bringing five, then they're going to have to start manning up, and that's a serious problem, given their personnel. I also felt that they had some issues covering the tight end. And this is something that in talking with their publishers and exchanging with some of their better educated fans, they're very, very concerned about the matchup with Nick O'Leary, because their guys, their secondary, their safeties and their linebackers have had some serious problems covering the tight end all year. And, you know, that could be a problem for them. Obviously, O'Leary is going to eat up a matchup situation where, you know, if they're going to man him up, he's going to have the edge there. I think they're going to end up spending a lot of time scheming on how to take O'Leary away. And honestly, that's where about half of Winston's interceptions have come this year, is trying to go to O'Leary. And most of those on option routes where teams have guessed right and they've bracketed or they've had a guy jump that option route. And I expect Oregon to try to do that. I would. What I would do if I were Fisher is I'd counter that usual option route. I'd tag it and I'd have a shake route where he goes down, it's sort of like a post route with a little shake. Looks like he's going to the option route and then turns inside, and you should put him in the clear in between safeties if they're in two, or just in front of the one. If they're in one, you kind of cut it a little flatter, or with the seam route, you know, go on the seam, or with a little out and up, like what they did against Georgia Tech. When they're going to expect that option route, you hit it a little bit deep and you can make a big play. Their safeties are not especially fast, although I really like Four. He's the one really physical player they've got back there. I really liked, actually, Ekpre Olamu when I watched him, not so much as a cover guy. He's not a guy that I felt would be one of the better cover corners Florida State's played this year. But he certainly, as a complete corner, a guy that comes up and tackles against the running game and the short passing game and all that, he's a physical matchup, very secure tackler. And I think that by and large, their whole defense, the most impressive thing to me about their defense is how well they tackle in space. They take disciplined angles, and they tackle extremely well in space. They don't miss a whole lot. They run to the football well, and they make tackles in space. And Ekpre Olamu is probably their best guy tackling in space, along with Four. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but they're going to miss that. It won't affect what they do coverage wise. I don't think he was not a guy that they would want to put in man coverage against any of Florida State's receivers at 5'9", about 180 pounds, 185 pounds. He's not a guy that was really suited to do with, you know, to lock one of those guys down in man. So, you know, they would have been conservative either way. And I think they're going to do the same thing. They're going to try to keep things in front, and they're going to try to close on the football with their physical tackles and try to separate the ball and just force Florida State to execute. The thing is, they're basically going to do what Georgia Tech did in the ACC championship game. And we saw how that went for Georgia Tech. If you don't have the personnel to get in Winston's face, and if you don't have the secondary to be able to single cover a little bit and take somebody away, it's going to be a problem. And I think that's what I see from their defense. I think their defense is going to have some serious problems against Florida State. Now, offensively, is a different story. You know, if I were coaching on the defensive side of the ball for Florida State, I would be having some very late nights, and I would not be sleeping very well until after this game is over. Because this is a very good offense, without a doubt. This is, I mean, Georgia Tech was the number one most efficient offense in the country, and this is number two. So you saw the difficulty that you had, if you're Florida State, if you saw that difficulty that you had trying to stop Georgia Tech, you're going to have similar problems stopping Oregon. Now, that said, when I look at their personnel and I look at what they do, they scare me less than Georgia Tech scared me. Looking at it from the Florida State perspective, they don't have a single wide receiver who scares you. They've got some good ones. You know, Devin Allen has some speed. They've got some speed out there. They've got quality out there, but it's more quality because it's quantity, if you will. They don't have a single guy that you really have to worry about. As a whole, you know, I think the Miami wide receiving crew, the Louisville wide receiving crew, and certainly the Clemson wide receivers, and maybe the Oklahoma State wide receivers would all be units that I would take over the Oregon group. They just don't have a wide receiver who really scares you in coverage. And with Florida State having the chance to get their corners completely healthy, they're going to have the opportunity to single cover those receivers a little bit and force Oregon to deal with something that they're not accustomed to dealing with, because most teams can't single cover three or four guys the way that Florida State will be able to do with their secondary. That said, it really doesn't matter because of the way that they run their scheme. Basically, their scheme is a lot like Fisher's in a lot of regards, in that they are oriented to take every free yard you're going to give them. If you're going to give them a bubble on the outside, they're going to take it with a screen. If you're going to pull a guy out of the box to try to stop the numbers in the passing game, they're going to run it. It's very simple what they do. It's not gimmicky at all. A lot of people think that their offense is gimmicky. It is not gimmicky. It is just simple arithmetic. They're going to go where you aren't. And the other thing that they do that is really, really, really dangerous is they do give you the eye candy. They give you, you know, the misdirection. They give you the sort of stuff up front. They do a lot of really nice stuff on their offensive line where they'll bust your keys if you're the defensive line. So, you know, you step thinking that it's inside zone, which is their base run play. You step thinking it's inside zone and you get trapped. Or, you know, you get something going the other way because they're going to bust your keys. They do a great job with that. I think they're going to run Mariota more in this game than they have all season. Most of the season, they've just run simple inside zone, outside zone. I expect those to be mostly reads in this game, because in the regular season, there's no reason to run them as reads. Why get him hit? He's gotten dinged up in prior years, and it may have cost him a shot at the national title last year. So this year, they didn't get him hit the same way. They ran more read stuff, particularly midline read in the Pac-12 championship game. And that's the sort of thing you got to really worry about. Midline read is what, you know, Georgia Tech does so well. It's terrifying. It's a very, very difficult thing to stop, because you're, generally speaking, you've got one guy that's going to be responsible for one gap on a given front. The midline sends two guys through the same gap. And so that means that you're kind of busted up a little bit. You've got to have proper communication on the defensive front to recover that gap. And it's very difficult to do. And what that allows them to do also is, while they on the offensive line, they're not especially impressive. I mean, they're not as good an offensive line as, say, Georgia Tech. As Boston College. They're pretty close to Georgia Tech. But they're not quite as good an offensive line as, say, Boston College, with the five graduate students who started for Boston College this year. They're certainly not as physical up front as them. But what they do is they will, if they can't block your defensive tackle, they'll read him. They'll just make him irrelevant. If they can't block your defensive end, they'll read him. They'll make him irrelevant. So there are all sorts of things they can do to scheme around an advantage that you may have, and they do a great job with it. It's a very, very good system. And they do it extremely well. And with Mariota back there, he doesn't make mistakes. He gets them in the right play. He generally throws in the right spots. You know, it's a very difficult task for a defense to face them, because you have to have perfect eye discipline. You have to have, I mean, it's eye discipline, eye discipline, eye discipline. If you look in the wrong spot, they're going to score. If you don't read your key, they're going to score. And they've got the speed to score right now. If one guy misses, it's a score. The good thing is that Florida State has not given up. I don't think Florida State, I can double check this, but I don't think Florida State's given up a run over 30 yards on the year. And I'm not sure that they've given up a run over 20. They've done a great job at the safety position and in the back seven, limiting big plays in the running game all season. And that's huge playing a team like Oregon that relies on those big plays. They want to get those big plays. They want to get you out of a gap and then go. And if you can get them into tight spaces, into a phone booth, you might feel a little bit better about that. You know, getting the size at Florida State's defensive size should have some advantage in the red zone. But they've been a very good red zone offense as well. I mean, this is going to be a very big challenge for Charles Kelly and the Florida State defense all game, without a doubt. Even though they don't have wide receivers who scare you, they don't have, you know, their tight end is pretty good. He's not as good as Farrell Cooper, or Farrell Johnson or Farrell Cooper. I don't remember his name off the top of my head. The Pharaoh. They're not as good as the guy who started the year for them, who is a very good tight end. And honestly, this is the thing. Oregon, had they had their full complement, four of their, say, eight best players are out for this game because of season-ending injuries. If they had all of those guys, this would be a game that I think Florida State would feel very, very nervous about, because it's a very good football team. Now, you add those guys and they're that much better. But I don't think without those guys, they match up as well across the board with Florida State. What you have to worry about, though, on their offense, I think the single biggest concern, other than the eye discipline thing up front and making sure that you're minding your gaps, has to do with their ability to scheme receivers wide open on vertical routes. I mean, they run a ton of trips with switch and scissors concepts, and they run a lot of rub routes and all this, and you have to be perfect in the secondary with your communication. You have to make sure that, you know, you're going to... This is a game where I would banjo all game, banjo being where defensive backs allow guys to release off the line of scrimmage and then match up and pick the guy who's running in their particular area. So it's man-to-man, but sort of a matchup situation where... You know, the outside defensive back takes the receiver who releases outside, rather than the receiver he's lined up over. Because they run a lot of switch concepts where the inside guy kind of comes outside the back heel of the outside guy and just goes upfield vertical, and they'll get guys wide open doing that, because it'll pick off the and it's a legal pick. They'll pick off the inside coverage guy, and there's just no chance of catching up. They do a great job with that, probably the best job of anybody in the country. And it's what, if you're the Florida State defensive coordinator, if you're the Florida State secondary coach, and they happen to be the same person, you're losing sleep over that. And you're spending hundreds of reps trying to get your guys to make sure that they know where they need to be on that. And the same thing is true with the safety position. You have to, you know, there's a saying, you got to know before you go. And that's what the deal is with the safety position for if you're playing against Oregon. They're going to do a lot of stuff. They're going to show stuff in the backfield. There's going to be backs who are, you know, it looks like you're going to, you know, safeties are going to be responsible for some extra run support. That's just the way it's going to be against a team like Oregon. And then they'll play action you, and you know, if you get caught looking in the backfield thinking it's a run play, they're wide open on a vertical route again. And that's what Mariota, you know, about half of his touchdown passes come on those wide open vertical routes, because they do such a good job with it. And he doesn't miss those a whole lot. So, I mean, that's going to be the real challenge on the defensive side. The good thing, if you're Florida State, is that you've had 3 weeks to get healthy. And, you know, with Niall Lawrence-Stample, who I still cannot believe is back. Niall Lawrence-Stample, the nose tackle that Florida State started the season with, one of the best players on the defensive front, he was outstanding in the first couple games, has been out since the Clemson game. And, you know, they've really suffered not having him on the interior. And he's back all of a sudden. His rehab time, his time for recovery from a torn pec muscle is, you know, normally you expect about eight months with a torn pec before return to action. He's back in 3.5. That's incredible. But the word out of practice is that he's doing extremely well, and that he's going to be able to offer some snaps. And even 20 good snaps from him would be immensely important for this Florida State defense. Because what they're going to try to do is use their size with Mario Edwards, with Eddie Goldman, with Niall Lawrence-Stample, with Derek Mitchell. Now you can trust Derek Nnadi. You've got all of those guys that you can put on the defensive interior. And Florida State can two-gap those guys. Every one of those guys can two-gap. And every one of those guys has the size to be able to win his matchup against the Oregon offensive front, which averages right around 300 pounds apiece. And they move really well. It's a zone blocking offensive line that, you know, they're not going to need to be very big. They get great angles and all that. But if you can two gap them and control them the way that a guy like Goldman or a guy like Niall Lawrence-Stample or a guy like Mario Edwards can do, that regains the gaps, that regains the numbers in your favor against the run. And that, I think, is the biggest thing moving forward that Florida State has going for them is, unlike so many other times all year, how many times this year have you told, have I said on this show and on Noel Digest that my concern is on the offensive or defensive interior where Florida State has a disadvantage? It's been quite a few. Certainly not on the offensive side since Cam Irving moved to center. But on the defensive side, it's still been a problem. You put Nia Lawrence Stample, if he's healthy at all in there, and that changes. And even with Derek Mitchell and Eddie Goldman in this game, I think Florida State has the edge on the defensive interior versus Oregon's interior three. And that's especially if Jonas Grasu doesn't play, and that's about a 50-50 proposition, the center for Oregon, who's been battling a lower extremity injury. There's some reports that he may not play in this game. But even if he does, I think Florida State has the edge on the inside there, and that makes a big difference. I mean, that's against their kind of offense. It's just like Georgia Tech. You have to be able to stop their inside run, or you're going to get run out of the stadium against them. But if you can stop that inside run, if you can force them to run a little bit wide and use your speed to pursue and make sure you take good angles, and if you can force their offense into second and eight, a lot of second and eight and second and seven situations, then their offense bogs down pretty quickly. They're not designed to line up in, third and six, third and seven and throw the football. This is an offense that's designed to play downhill. And now with Mariota, they can throw it pretty well. Although I got to say, I've not been impressed by his ball placement. I'm not nearly as impressed as I expected to be about his precision, his accuracy and ball placement when the windows aren't wide, wide open. And when he doesn't have a big, clean platform and a lot of space in the pocket to throw. I've been disappointed by what I saw there. I mean, the guy's really, really good, but there's definitely some stuff that if I were an NFL scout, I'd be concerned about there. He also has struggled a little bit when he's had inside pressure. He's a guy, he likes the pocket to be clean. He doesn't like throwing when he's got pressure, up the middle from, say, a defensive tackle who can compress the pocket. That's something that he has struggled with a little bit. So, and if I'm Florida State here, what I'm doing is I'm telling my defensive tackles they've got to win their matchups with the interior three from Oregon. If they can prevent those guys from getting releases to the second level, and getting to the linebackers, then I think Florida State can limit at least their running game and limit the damage there. And what you're hoping to do, I think, if you're FSU, what I would be hoping to do is to force Mariota to keep and to hit the heck out of him when he does keep. So force them to run the read plays, force them to run Mariota, and then hit him a bunch. Because he's not, it's one difference that I see on film, other than the, some ball placement and anticipation things. One thing that I just I've got my doubts about in terms of Mariota, whereas if you hit Winston, he gets angry. And this is actually something that someone mentioned to me from inside the program about the Florida game. You notice that Winston played the best right after he got hit in the mouth, right after a guy took a swing at him and punched him on the Florida sideline. Florida State scored on both of those drives. That drive and the drive immediately following. And then after that, they went into halftime and Winston sort of cooled down again. But when he was upset, when he was angry because he'd been hit, he was lights out. That's something I don't see to the same level with Mariota. I'm not sure he likes getting hit. Winston's a guy who almost likes getting hit because he gets mad and then he starts to play better. Mariota, he's a guy that if I were Florida State, I'd try to hit him a bunch. I'd want to compress the pocket as much as I can, get my hands on him after every pass, try to make sure I got some good hits on him as he threw. I'd try to make him keep the ball and hit him as much as I could before he could get out of bounds. It's a situation where I'd try to get very physical with him and just see exactly how he responds to that because he's so used to being clean. And the one thing you can't afford, obviously, is to force him to keep the ball and let him hit a seam because the guy can really run. But at the end of the day, I think that's all stuff that this Florida State defense can do, particularly as they get healthy, particularly as a guy like Terrence Smith and a guy like Nia Lawrence Stample and a guy like Matthew Thomas and some of these guys who've been dinged up or have been out of the lineup or been playing on one leg. as those guys return in, this is a team that can suddenly start to do some of that, can run to the edge, that can be stout on the inside. And if you want to see what they can look like in that, look at the Oklahoma State game, which is an offense that's actually very similar to what Oregon has run all year. That Oklahoma State game with J.W. Walsh was a quarterback who ran 4-5. He was a good quarterback. They didn't have a good quarterback the rest of the year, and they looked like dog crap. But with Walsh, that was a good offense. And they certainly had a lot of speed at running back with Tyreek Hill on the field. And, you know, they ran a lot of the same stuff that Oregon did. And Florida State was able to defend them more or less inside out and was able to you know, they went up 17-0 in that game. Really should have been 24-0 if Winston hadn't been careless with the football, because that defense was able to win on the interior through the first part of that game. Now, they wore down a little bit as the game went on, and that's something that would certainly be a concern in this one, although I think they'll be in shape for this. But that's the way that I think they're going to defend this Oregon team. They're going to look at it very much like what they did against Oklahoma State, and I think they're equipped with the personnel as they get healthy to do that well. So I think this is a terrific matchup for Florida State. My early thoughts here, I think they're going to have a hard time holding Florida State under 40 points with the kind of pace they play at. And I think they're going to have a hard time scoring over 35 against Florida State. So, this is a game where I'm shocked by the point spread the same way that I was against looking at, Ohio State national championship game a few years back, the same way that I was with the Clemson game against Florida State last year. This is a game where the tape does not seem to match the point spread. And that doesn't happen very often, but this is one of those examples where, you know, I could be wrong, but what I'm seeing here, I think Florida State has an edge. I think this is a very good matchup. And Lord knows what Jameis Winston is going to look like with the weight of the world off his shoulders after having come through the code of conduct hearing and being cleared with that. I mean, he hasn't played without something hanging over his head for 18 months. And all of a sudden, he's got nothing to focus on but football for the first time in a long time. And it's going to be very interesting to see how a healthy, guy who's had a high ankle sprain since the Louisville game, healthy and focused and playing against this year's Heisman Trophy winner, should be very, very fun to watch and see how he plays and how this Florida State team plays in a game where I think they've got a terrific matchup. Well, that's going to be all for us today. On behalf of the rest of the Noll Digest crew, I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast. Thanks for listening. I made this.